is officially Tiger Time!
We never reconcile.
Oh, the Tiger was a
like king. Like the Tiger of old, the storm and the bones of the Tiger.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And what's your mood?
It was like, so the end of the year was a bit anticlimactic, but the sort of watching the Dustin Martin highlights and starting to get, it was actually this morning when I woke up and I got that finals feeling again of the excitement and the anticipation. And it all came back from last year. And last year's Geelong final this year, same time this year, it's all come fighting back today, actually. But weirdly, I'm super confident.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I've gone back and forth. I think yesterday I was a complete mess. Today I've sort of tried to dig deep on the rational stuff and come up with reasons why we're going to win. But yeah, by Thursday I'm just going to be a mess. I don't hate Hawthorn, but I sort of hate where they are in the AFL. And come Thursday night, I'm gonna be seething with resentment. And actually, I started down this rabbit hole just thinking about how, you know, there's so much noise and distraction in the course of an AFL season, but what really stuck with me was that, you know, Alistair Clarkson, you know, he's bothered about something. He gives Gil McLaughlin a call. They go and get a coffee. You know, Clarkson mentions something about, oh, well, I think the way that, you know, defenders are scragging and, you know, the Richmond defenders, you know, we played them a few weeks ago. They were doing a lot of scragging. I think that's partly why the TV networks are complaining about the lack of scoring. And, you know, lo and behold, the umpires crack down on defenders making contact prior to a marking contest. Which I don't think it's a coincidence. I think it's reflective of the half-assed patronage-based system where, you know, someone like Hawthorn clearly has more weight than they should. And it annoys me.
Yeah, particularly in the light where of the us having the most uniquely discriminated against Keith Ford in the AFL.
Well, and not just Keith Ford, it's the entire team. Like, I can't find any record of a team like ours. Even the great defensive Ross Lyon coach teams, where that they had just this amazing free kick differential.
It is extraordinary. Anyway, quality rant to start with. I'm just convinced, like, I've gone through Hawthorn so precisely. So in depth, sort of looking at all the advanced analytics. And, you know, barring the fact that random stuff happens on an AFL game, I just think that if this game's played 10 times, we just win 7 times every time. I just think we're a notably better team.
Look, I'll be interested what stats have led you to that conclusion, because I think that's absolutely the case as well. And the betting line has settled in at about 17 points, having started at 15. So, you know, clearly the bookmakers think the same thing, but. Yeah, I just can't help worrying that this week is the three out of ten, and they pinch a completely undeserved win for a team that's, you know, already, you know, they're on the downside of a generation of success.
Yeah, this thing about Hawthorn's rebuilt. Well, it's like all teams that have a bounce like this. They've brought in some good talent, but they're still getting by with an awful lot of premiership talent. I mean, they still had, again, on the Swans game, I believe they had 9 players with above 150 games. You know, that's not an inexperienced up and coming team. You know, they have rebuilt their midfield, which is really impressive and hard to do. at the end of the day, there's an awful lot of old talent here.
Mm. Look, they've traded away almost all of their first-round draft picks this decade, which is incredible. And it's been successful in sustaining a successful era. But the flip side of it is you just don't have, you know, for us it's the Jack Higgins and the Noah Bolters of the world who are sort of, you know, in their first year, clearly got some talent, but, you know, their best is a few years away. And then, yeah, they just don't have a lot of those guys. I mean, they've recruited well, and James Sicily is a good player, and we'll get to James Warfel. But yeah, they've done a mini rebuild. It'd be a mistake to think of it as anything else.
Yeah, so they're, I mean, we're not exactly stacked with young talent as well, but they're you know, bottom line is they're Shane Edwards, guy who's giving late career golden runner form, or is Sean Borgoin, who in no way is overrated, actually deserves all the credit he gets. He's still the 35th rated player in the AFL. He's 34. Like,
yeah,
this is it. This is almost certainly his last good season. And, you know, this is a team that, while it may win on Saturday, is almost certainly not going to win the flag. So, you know, it's a nice rebuild to their credit, but it's not your 2013 Hawks.
No. They're a good defensive team.
They are indeed.
They're not. What's interesting about this is sort of the clash of styles with us, that we're the number one pressure team, number one for tackles inside 50, number one for intercepts by some considerable margin, but they've had the least meters gained, and they conceded the least inside 50s of any team. So they are no mugs. They do it differently to us. It's more of a ball control style, but it's no mistake. It is an effective defence.
Okay, well, you brought it up. The ball control style, this is sort of what some people are talking about that gives the Hawks a chance against us, based on the theory that the ball control style is the best way to beat us. I'm not convinced that it is. I think it's actually very difficult. It's very difficult to get a clear form line of the modern Richmond era because it's really not very old. It's only really a season and a half old that we're playing statistically the football that resembles it does now. And even now, we're playing quite different football to last year. But so you basically, for instance, against Hawthorn, we've got two games of form to draw on. You know, I know there is some claim that Dimmel was laying the frameworks of that of the Richmond team in 2016. Well, there's no
empirical... You had to squint pretty hard.
Yeah, there's no proof that I can find of that.
I remember going to that
Hawks game,
with you, and Jesus.
You just cannot... And if we were trying to implement a game plan there to play more attacking football the next year, pig's ass. That looked like a team that was trying to lose by less than 100 points. But we digress. So we've got two games of Hawthorn drawn, both of which we've handled them fairly easily. Or through the second, in the more recent game, the scoreline flattered them because they made a comeback in junk time. But
like, yeah, we got 39 points ahead in the last quarter, and you don't win games when you're from 30. 9 points ahead in the last quarter.
I think the way that we've been beaten in the few times we've lost in the last 18 months is long, quick, effective ball movement. GWS players really well because they do it very well. I don't think the ball control style... I don't buy this idea. We do get smashed in the possession sometimes, but I think it's when we lose, it's because teams really pick us apart with effective ball movement. And by the way, Nick, it's going to be wet and rainy on Thursday. What's really hard to do when it's wet and rainy?
Precise skills.
Yeah, kick accurately. So I know it's a short, it's a, you know, it, it, you know, they're a very high-skilled team and they're able to do it. They'll be able to do it reasonably well. But I just can't help think that they actually don't have the key to unlock us. And I'll come to the individual players as well, but I just think the weather and their game style is not the best way to beat Richmond. I think we're actually quite lucky that we're playing the Hawks in this week.
You can say that rationally, but yeah, I'm still going to be a nervous wreck. I do think
so, setting myself up for a massive fall.
Yeah, I do think you're right about the weather suiting us. Although, yeah, I was surprised actually that despite Tom Mitchell's best efforts, they're actually a so-so clearance and contested possession team. So that's not going to be a big edge. I mean, you'd think McAvoy probably shades Nankervis for the taps, and Nank probably does a bit more around the ground. So, yeah, I really do think it's a... Well, I think if we can't kick the ball down Sicily's throat all game, he's the number two intercept player in the AFL. We've obviously got number one.
But you know when the last time Sicily played a game?
It was a while ago, wasn't it?
14th of July.
Wow. Yeah, that's a while.
Yeah, and like, he's come straight back in, and obviously modern sports science has got a lot better, as you know, we can do it successfully. And I have no reason to doubt the Hawks are as professional as we are, but that's hard to do. And he's coming back in and playing centre-half back, and the game's going to be hot, it's going to be fast, and though his wrist, which is his sore body part is going to come under a lot of pressure. And Frawley missed the round 23 match, which was a must-win game for them, with back jarring, which doesn't sound, they'll probably shoot, you know, maybe it's the kind of thing that go away, but again, sort of carrying an injury, coming into a game where you're going to have to be bending over a lot as a key back. I like some of those odds.
Yeah, I can see what you mean.
But going back to McAvoy and Nank, since you brought it up, the advanced starts love McAvoy. And it's actually hard when you...
Which is weird, because he doesn't win a ton of the ball, and he doesn't kick a lot of goals.
And, I mean, yeah, you actually... And he's not that great a tap ruckman. He's okay. He's better than Nank, but he... Like when they played each other this year, they sort of he had you know 8 or 9 more stats taps, and that's he averages only 6 more a game. So it's not it's not a big difference. Nank's often shaded by a lot more than that. The thing that I can work out about McAvoy is his disposal is very efficient.
He goes at 80%,
which is and he's not a particularly high hand passer. He is actually. He happens more than he kicks, but he's still I think he's just efficient and
comparatively high skilled for a ruckman.
Yeah, and takes the odd contested mark. Again, both those things. What are they harder to do, Nick?
Harder to do in the wet.
Yep.
I was surprised actually looking because if you think Sicily's a very good mark, McAvoy's pretty good. They've got Ruffhead and Gunston and Bruce, who can all take a mark up forward. And yet they're not a particularly big contested marking team either. They've sort of got bits and pieces where you almost expect them to be a bit better than they are.
They're a bit like Richmond in the way that in some ways their performance is better than their statistical indicators, and they're like that. I mean, they're good at the inside 50s, but that's really an outcome measure than a game measure.
And Bruce and Gunston kicked 100 goals between them, which is which is their version of Rewalt and Caddy.
They're the only two players on their team that made the first or second AFL ratings team of the year.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, and
Not Mitchell?
No, Tom Mitchell is... I mean, obviously, he's good. He's a statistical monster.
And he's about to win the Brownlow.
But the AFL stats don't love him. And for the same reason that, we saw live, he'll get 3 votes when he played us. But you know, you go back and watch the game, and aside from the commentators going on about him, like, it's hard to really pinpoint the truly decisive disposals that he has. And that's what... I mean, he's still very good. He's the 19th ranked player in the AFL, but arguably, you know, he's not Dustin Martin. You know, if you had them at the same age, to win the game this week, I would rather have Dusty, because I think what Mitchell's really good at is more replaceable.
Yeah, and look, and he's just not nearly... He's kicked a few goals, but yeah, Dusty's just a completely different weapon. The thing that worries me is if sort of Mitch... They get first use of the ball and they can get it out to their smooth movers, so to speak. Like if Isaac Smith, Sean Burgoyne, Jarman Impey, if those guys can get running, then what I think is our advantage is having more pace and athleticism around the ground. Yeah, I think that's a scenario where we can lose. The other one is, of course, where we bog down, we have tons more inside 50s, they're a good defensive team, and we don't generate good shots at goal, and we kick 10 goals, 15.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what, like, there is a route in the AFL you can lose games by poor goal shooting. Mm. One thing I find reassuring about that is, like, I'm more worried about not the bad luck scenario, but the sort of the rope-a-dope scenario, like, that we just continually get inside 50s, but that's not what they're good at. They're good at denying inside 50s. So that's another one of the reasons that gives me hope, is that they haven't been, you know, they're not going to be able to deny our inside 50s, because we will get in, because it's just our forward press is so good, and particularly this week when, you know, what the flood's going to be on, and when you have point kickouts, you're going to have whichever team it kicks a point, they're going to have repeat shots of goal. It's both teams are going to do it. It's going to be a field position game. So they're not going to be able to deny Sandown 50s, which takes away one of their key statistical advantages. I was just going to say, I mean, back on the Mitchell matchup, if Cochin, the other fear with Mitchell is that, you know, Cochin has gone... By the way, Isaac Smith hasn't been very good in the second half of the year. Hmm. But similarly, Cochin has gone 6 games in a row without cracking 20 possessions. So he's going to need... If Cochin's going head-to-head with Mitchell, which he may well be, like, he can lose by 10 possessions and then we still win easily. Hmm. He can't lose by 25.
No, look, I think it's a bit of a Rory Sloane deal where we might start with Cochin and then roll Graham over for times in the matchup, which we did last time.
I love that idea.
Mm.
Yeah. What else stands out to you for the game?
Look, if it's wet, I don't think they play another tall. Which would be interesting if they did.
I would love it if they did. I think it'd be great.
I know, but it might affect our selection, I think, if they did, because I think the ideal situation for us is Asprey on Roughhead, and then Rance and Grimes play matchups on Gunston and Bruce, depending on who's deepest at a particular moment. And Segler, if he played, actually that'd be an ideal matchup for Rance, because he could drop off to his heart's content.
Yeah, and I don't think, I mean, surely they're playing it to beat up Nank and establish centre square dominance, but that's not really what they're good at. And I don't think you get, like, Nank's just had a week off, I just don't think that's going to work like it hasn't worked before.
No, and he's had two of the last 4 weeks off, so.
And missing that extra run, like, it's, you know, fine in the second quarter, but when you get late in the third and you're coming against the team that finishes strong, those legs are going to get heavy and you're going to miss that extra runner. Which, by the way, is one of the reasons why I wouldn't play Conker. in this game, or the injury risk, but I'm pretty sure he is going to play.
Mm.
Can I address something, a random fact, unless there's anything you wanted to say about that? I'm just going to change the topic.
No, no. Oh, well, I was just going to say that I think a bit of an X factor is, I mean, he's got a fair bit of publicity because, you know, James Warple is this year's Jack Graham a bit, sort of the mid-round draft pick who, third-round draft pick, slipped a bit in the draft, mature-bodied inside midfielder, has been good for them in the last 3 weeks.
Mm, yeah, that's annoying.
Mm, I know. Because otherwise they're very dependent on, you know, it's Tom Mitchell, Jager O'Meara, and the supporting cast.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, they're not deep. Also, Liam Shields is all right.
Yeah, Liam Shields is all right. Burgoyne takes a turn and is still good. But, yeah, they just don't, those guys don't scare you across four quarters the same way.
The Alistair Clarkson being a genius theory and having him 2 weeks to game plan.
Meh.
Unfortunately, there's a slight bit of evidence that he's good.
Of course he's good.
The Hawks have won the last 4 years in a row off the bye. Like, I sort of looked for games where he's had extra time to game plan. You know, it's four games, and two of those were against the Crows, decent team, but... take it for what I want. But, you know, their preliminary finals, the ones where they had byes, they won both times. But they were narrow games, so you can hardly say it was... And, you know, they were essentially a good team those years. So, you know, you can hardly say it was a coaching
masterpiece. Yeah, and when you've got the bye and the other team doesn't, that's a pretty big advantage, I think.
Yeah, so, look, it's there, but I don't think you can change your game plan at this much. When you're a good team, like, it's the sort of the non-dominant strategy is, like, Essendon did play, roll the dice, played a slightly different strategy against us than they do normally. They are ultra-attacking, rightfully so. When you've only got a 20% chance of winning, you don't try to play the odds. But the Hawks are going to have to go, surely, play plan A.
Mm. Yeah, and see how their plan A matches up against our plan A, which as everyone knows, is to, you know, swarm them, set up our defensive structures, squeeze them with pressure, and destroy them on the break.
Yeah, and get lots of repeat inside 50s once we get it inside. I'm overall confident. By the way, Kendon McIntosh in career best form. And that was the other thing I just want to talk about, the relative injuries. You know, Nick, we've been playing well all year.
Mm.
We're clearly the best 10 by percentage. And our injury, I mean, missing one forward pocket, as much as you and I both love him, like, that's not a bad injury list.
Well, it's assuming Kane Lambert gets up. And the drum beats are positive.
Neil Baum said it publicly, but I know people have said it privately. He's playing,
And that is a very good thing in terms of I think he's a great MCG player.
Yeah, and the way they talk about him is very. It gives me confidence. They're not saying, you know, they're not sort of, you know, mealy mouthing around how much he trained and things like that. They're sort of confident in saying that he trained fully. So yeah, I think Lambo's in and he'll play well.
Mm. So who's going to get dropped? I've got two names, neither of which we've mentioned.
Well, won't we only have one in?
Yeah, so I've got two candidates. I think if it was a dry day, we might have to reconsider. But if you go on form, you have to drop Nathan Broad.
But isn't that count for flexibility? You have to play him.
Well, if they're not tall, you just don't need the flexibility, I don't think, because he's one thing I took away from the Collingwood game was that he's sort of good but not great against everybody.
No, nicely summarised.
And he's in not particularly good form. He's had 20 disposals in the last 3 weeks. He didn't have a turnover last week, and if he's not generating turnovers, you know, what's his value? Although he frankly did have a semi-comical moment jumping in the ruck, so I appreciated that. But
Yeah, yeah, I wonder if they're going somewhere with that. Give Short Grigo a break and get him to do it. I don't know. But
it was just a bit of a giggle in a dead rubber.
Yeah, it's a very... It's actually... It doesn't work to him to play ruck because he's not... Like, if you're going to play a small ruck, they've got to get the ball.
Mm.
They've got to make the ruckman play on the spread because, obviously, they're giving something up. And Board's not good at that.
No, or else you've got to sort of nullify the head-out to advantage. And, yeah, he's sort of a bit stuck in between.
Yeah, like, he's not... Like, just because he's losing the head-out by 3 less centimetres doesn't mean he's still not losing the head-out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, I mean, it looks slightly more, it looks slightly less crazy because he's a bit taller, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's still, I don't actually see the net benefit. So, yeah, I thought Broad would be all right, but now that you said it, I can see the case.
Mm. Brandon Ellis is the other one. And that, yeah.
Ahead of Conker?
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, I said it last week that, you know, Brando's been dropped and Conker hasn't. And look, maybe it is Conker. I'm just inclined to think that they're going to want another midfielder. But yeah, and perhaps I'm overreacting to how frustrated I got with all the turnovers he coughed up against the Bulldogs. But yeah, I just really wondered about his decision making under pressure.
Yeah, and he's not going to get the football a lot in the finals because he didn't in the last final series.
No, I mean, he's been winning the ball the last few weeks. And that's a good thing, but yeah.
No, not necessarily. I don't necessarily think Brandon Ellis getting cheap outside touches helps the team. But
well, he did cough the ball up, but he was second on the team for causing intercepts, which is very useful, but... Yeah, I mean, we're arguing about the 22nd player on the team.
I think the balance of risk has to go to the player who has a far more reliable body.
Hmm.
You don't want to lose a game because your 22nd best player, who's there partly because gives you outside run, body fails.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean the difference between Brandon Ellis and Reece Conker is much, much more than the difference between whoever's the best player than Reece Conker and no one.
Mm. Yeah, and the rotations thing. Look, I'm just a bit gun shy about worrying about players' injury risk after last year making the call that Jack Graham was too much of an injury risk to play in the finals.
That's quite fair. Well said. Yeah, because he at the time was one of the few players that proportionally had a worse injury history than Reece Conker.
Yeah, I started off wondering if Camden McIntosh was a chance to get dropped, but then I think like you, I did the same research that you did and thought, oh, he's actually in really good form.
Yeah, and he had that spectacular kick that we mentioned last week.
Yeah. And the other thing about it, I looked into the numbers, and yeah, he plays much better at the MCG.
Yep, and by the way,
extra 3 disposals a game at the MCG versus not.
Okay, Nick, fourth quarter, long raking ball to the wing. There's an opposition wingman sprinting to the ball, 30 minutes away. There's going to be a big contested possession on the wing. And there's one Richmond player with him, and there's another pair coming, but they're 40 metres away. If it's not going to be Dusty, and they've got to carry over 40 metres to get to that ball, which, you know, this stuff happens in finals, who would you want on that foot race other than Camden McIntosh?
I can
think of one player.
Dan Rioli?
Exactly. Boom. But after that, who would you want?
Yeah. I can sort of see in my mind's eye Camden McIntosh monstering Isaac Smith, and that makes me happy.
Oh, that is a good thought. Isaac Smith will win the possession battle. I believe he did when they played on each other before. But Camden McIntosh will win you, hopefully, the crucial contested possession on the wing. All right. So, quite weirdly confident.
Yeah, weirdly confident right now, going to be a complete mess. By Thursday night, semi-catatonic.
Oh, I'm so excited!
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not even going to be able to talk about it. Do you want to talk about some other news?
Yeah, well, let's sort of there for last because it was pretty dismal. Trade news.
Well, actually, I wanted to do the All Australians first. And
oh yeah, sorry, go on.
You know, you follow a football team for long enough, and you get the really heartwarming moments that sort of transcend football a bit. And I really, you know, perhaps it's a biased perspective, but I thought Shane Edwards getting All Australian selection was one of those moments where, yeah, I mean, there was a bit of sniping from uninformed corners of the internet, but I think among football people, that was a really popular decision.
Yeah, Shane Edwards is the top-rated midfield forwarder in the AFL this year, 17th best player in the AFL, rated one spot above Tom Mitchell.
Yeah, second in the AFL in goal assists.
Yeah, look, the advanced statistics have loved Shane Edwards for a while. I loved how some people said, the statistics don't support the idea that Shane Edwards is a good player. Well, that's because you're an effing dinosaur and you don't look past disposal statistics. And if you're still looking on that, good for you, and they're important for fantasy football. But all the more advanced
statistics in the real world.
Yeah, are free and easy to access. And also, they don't properly measure defenders yet, they definitely measure small forwards, and it's clear to see that Shane Edwards is one of the best in the AFL.
And everything about Shane Edwards on and off the field is awesome these days. It's great.
He's always been such a fun player. Like, even when he didn't get the ball much, the odd highlight was just so special. Anyway, yeah, we know that. Move on.
We know that. The other thing is when Dusty was named captain. Oh, sorry. And when Buddy was named captain, I realised that another result of 2017 is that I have absolutely no, you know. Whereas in years past, it'd be, oh, you drafted Tambling ahead of Buddy. don't care.
Yeah, I've gone for it now.
Don't care. We won the flag.
And, the AFL's a lot more boring without Buddy Frankel.
Yeah. I would like Dusty to be All-Australian. Having made that slip of the tongue, I actually really liked that idea in a few years.
Of Dusty being All-Australian captain?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Oh, we have not mentioned Dusty's 200th.
Yes. Everyone should stop the podcast and go and look at the highlights video that the club produced. That's pretty awesome.
But if you're male, I suggest that don't stand up for a while afterwards.
Yeah.
That they should sell that. If that video was sold on the open market, they'd have to put it in a plain paper bag and put it behind the newsagent's head. Do they still do that? I don't know. Anyway.
I don't know.
Oh, it's magnificent. You know what I dug out, Nick, and I'll put it on Twitter in a little while? I dug out Dustin Martin's first goal.
Against
the Western Bulldogs. It was round two. But, you know, his first two games in the AFL, he got 18 possessions and 20 possessions, and he kicked the goal, and it was flogging against the Western Bulldogs. We were being flogged in 2010, bit of Ben Nason, Jane Post action, good times. But Jakey King gets a really nice contested possession and gets the ball up to Dusty, and his first goal, he sidesteps someone. It's a beautiful running goal. It's absolute quality from the very first moment.
Yeah, and you sort of forget. So when Dusty was at his draft camp, he tested in the top 10% of his year, which you sort of you see. It's easy to forget when he's such a weapon these days. But yeah, it's pretty awesome.
But his standing start acceleration is just one day, you know, watching the highlight video, his agility stands out so much. And I love it if the, because he's not strong, you know, he doesn't lift a lot of weights. I'd love it if there was sort of some advanced athletic testing that shows why he's so good. You know, he's a bit like Bell for the Pittsburgh Steelers in Philadelphia. He's just this incredible athlete, but you're not quite sure what makes him good.
Yeah, and I've always been fascinated about, you know, the story that, you know, he's good at weights, but not a complete beast. Like, you know, Shane Tuck apparently was always the guy that could lift the entire bench press, but Yeah, he's just got just amazing functional strength.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Exactly. All right.
BFL. It was a bit disappointing.
Yeah, it was.
I completely agree with Neil Baum that the fixturing did us no favours. Having to hold Sammy Lloyd and Garthwaite out of the team.
No, and the inside 50s were tied. But here's a very damning stat, Nick, that they had 30 more possessions and had 33 more tackles. So they're sort of... Their big old bodies took us out the back of the shed and beat us up a bit.
I know, and a few of our guys didn't respond all that well. I mean, yeah, I don't think we can play Dan Butler based on that. I mean, he kicked a goal in the first couple of minutes, but yeah, otherwise he had 3 disposals in half of football.
Yeah, no, and we were never going to. In fairness, I don't think. I think the best case scenario is next week if we're playing.
Give him another week. Yeah, well, we've got Essendon this week. Patrick Nash had, I think, his worst game of the year disposals wise as well. Sort of perhaps not. And Tyson Stengel again, other than a beautiful specky, did very little, and I think. You know, when you've got 3 guys down like that, Soldo got beaten in the hitouts, which hardly ever happens.
Yeah, so some people very tough. Down on Solo on the internet.
Yeah, and you know, our best player was listed. Liam Baker got had a decent day, but got reported and suspended for this week. Our best player was Hugh Beasley at full back, and that's always a bad sign.
Yeah, when you barely heard of your best player, it's not a good sign.
He's been out all year. He's a VFL stalwart. But
But the most positive thing for me was that Bolter made the best.
He did. Had 4 contested marks. And yeah, he does look a level above sometimes. I mean, yeah, he still plays in 3 different positions. I think in part to try and keep his concentration up during the game, so you can see why he's not in the seniors, but you can also see why he's got a chance to be a real weapon in the seniors.
Mm. All right, Nick, one more time.
Well, I just wanted to. I did actually have a flash. I've been sort of assuming that Oleg Markov was on very thin ice, but. God, seeing him run around again on the weekend. Oh, God, he can look great.
He can. It's sort of, yeah. There was a funny moment, and this was, I think, pointed out to us by Sean, that Barmy was asked about Butler and Oleg coming back for the seniors. And you could see this sort of pause where Bob was like, what the? Oh, Oleg Markov. Yeah, gotcha. Because, he had the cliche about he'll be exploring all his options at the end of the year, and the actual senior player, best 22 player, is he coming back? And they're sort of not the two same cliches he can use in the same answer.
Insert cliche B.
I guess he's a chance. I think, to hang around, because, as you pointed out before, there are plenty of guys who are going to go.
Yeah, there's a reasonably long list, and you mentioned about trade rumours, and the trade rumour season is fully started, and if we weren't, preparing to play in a qualifying final, we'd be focused on that too, but... I suppose.
Yeah, the strangest thing is Jared Ruffhead supposedly flying to Gold Coast to try and recruit his successor, Tom Lynch.
I mean, look, the before we quickly talk about specific players, because 3 Richmond players have come up in rumours today, but just as always, the public service warning that we give out at this time of year, that if something sounds too good to be true, it is. Like, if, on Big Footy, there's talk about Adam Kira, Chira from Fremantle. Like, yeah. I mean, the drums are definitely beating that he's interested in coming back to Victoria, but he's the number two pick in the draft. If we were going to trade for him, it's two first-round draft picks as sort of the starting point to the offer.
Yeah, and then a bit of extra sugar probably as well.
Yeah, probably a bit of extra sugar as well. So, yeah, if it sounds too good to be true, it is. But on the specific players, I think the most surprising was the report from John Ralph that Shai Bolton's set to re-sign.
Yeah, I must admit that I'd sort of thought he was gone.
Yeah, definitely.
But there you go. I'm glad the people who know him best think there's, including himself, think there's still hope for him at Richmond.
Well, he's 19 and he's really talented, and he hasn't put it all together. So
yeah, that's fair to say.
The other two, Corey Ellis, Essendon rumoured to be interested.
Look, if he's still in the AFL next year, good for him.
Good for him. And Gold Coast sniffing around Anthony Miles.
Why couldn't it be Brisbane, a team like actually like? You know?
Yeah, they don't need him as much.
That's true. Like, I mean, I'm glad he's staying in the AFL because Anthony Miles deserves to play 100 AFL games. I mean, the kid used to fill up his rubbish bin with ice cubes so he could have ice baths when he was 16. God's sake, this kid. And the kid's talented. He's good at football. Mm. Anyway.
I know. He won't return much in a trade. Neither will Corey Ellis.
Nothing, I'd imagine, both of them. But that's fine.
I don't think there's much trade value for any of our non-best 22 that we would be interested in trading.
No. Lloyd's a good chance to stay. Like, I mean, Lloyd might play on the weekend.
Lloyd is ideal depth for us with Miles moving on.
Yeah, and it seems like people like him. Most importantly, Dusty likes him.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Dusty taking a player as a date.
All right. Look, okay. I've actually withheld. I have more Hawthorn stats that I'm not going to bore you with. But yeah, it's... God, it's exciting.
I know. Yeah, excited now. Nervous wreck Thursday night. God, I hope we win.
You know, we've never gone into a game this confident. We are just setting ourselves up.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.